Good morning, Rise and Freedom at 7:01. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson. Let's get the party started. Red meat is not a health risk. A new study slams years of shoddy research on red meat. We'll talk about all of that at the top of the show today. Then at 7:18 this morning, we found out why Donald Trump can't use Twitter. You know, the results make perfect sense. We'll talk about that at 7:18. At 7:35 this morning, Patrick Carroll will be joining us on the program for his very first interview on the show. He's also a writer at the Foundation for Economic Education, like our buddy John Miltimore, who wrote an article asking the question, are libertarians house cats? At 7:51 this morning, what do you call your in-laws? I know it seems like a strange question, but I mean, you know, you call your in-laws what you call your in-laws, but different people have different rules and protocol for what you call your in-laws. And since you're going to be meeting and seeing some of them this week and Thanksgiving, maybe it's time to revisit why we call our in-laws what we call them. At 8 o'clock this morning, Camilla Peterson joins us, and we are not related. We're going to talk to her about a disturbing campaign from Balenciaga that sparked outrage online. I won't even show the photographs or anything like that because, well, now that we're monetized on YouTube, I actually have an incentive to be a little bit more careful, even though we're not on the radio. Advertisers, they control everything. At 8:23 this morning, Squiggly, everybody's favorite Squiggly line guy, will be joining us on camera to talk about why that conspiracy theorist radio host, you know who he is not going to be allowed back on Twitter. Everybody else is back on Twitter. Donald Trump's back on Twitter. Why can't that guy be back on Twitter? Shall not say his name. And then at 8:35 this morning, if you missed my interview with Gabby Hoffman yesterday, I'll play that for you. We've got a great show for you today. All right. I know it's funny that I should be talking like nice things about red meat this morning because I actually got food poisoning last night. My beautiful wife and I went out for drinks with some friends, and I sat down and I had some food, and well, I think I probably would have been just fine if I had just drank alcohol, but because of the food, whatever it was that I ate that got me last night. Ooh, not so good, not so good. But it is Thanksgiving, so I will forge on and try and eat as much as I can. Thanks for tuning into the Wake Up America show. Remember, you can send us a text at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. We'd love to hear from our listeners today. On your text message. So let's hit the story. Oh, goodness gracious. You have to bear with me this morning. I'll try not to pull a Jeb Bush and be low energy, but I might be a little bit tamped down today just because, ooh, tummy. Red meat is not a health risk. New study slams years of shoddy research. This is a big story, a huge story. And I really think that you ought to take this with you, bookmark it, and share it with your friends. Studies have been linking red meat consumption to health problems like heart disease and cancer for years, but all of these studies that have come out have had a big methodological limitations. This is according to Big Think. Health scientists at the University of Washington scrutinized decades of research on red meat consumption and its links to various health outcomes, and they introduced a new way to assess health risks while they were doing this. They only found weak evidence that unprocessed red meat consumption is linked to colorectal cancer, breast cancer, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and most importantly of all, because this was the big one that everybody was touting for years, there is no link at all between eating red meat and a stroke. Now, studies have been, again, linking red meat consumption to a lot of health problems for years. Right. If, you know, strokes, heart disease, like, you know, high cholesterol, well, you got to cut back on your red meat. But it turns out that a lot of those studies have relied on shoddy evidence for that. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Bert Crosh, Quest Fanning, Cecilia Harden, Chris Morrill, and Tali Owens. Nice to see you all today. Thanks for joining us over on the live stream. And we're thankful to have you over on YouTube, our first full day being monetized. Funny thing was, yesterday when I went through to monetize all my videos, almost all of my streams were ineligible. So hopefully in the future, I'll be able to produce content on YouTube that is both entertaining but also doesn't get me demonetized. Robbie Theremin is giggling in carnivore. Good morning, Robbie. Nice to see you this morning. And Carpaccio for the win from our new friend over on Twitch, NeraUS333. Glad to have you here. Cecilia says, bring on the medium rare steak. Oh, baby, Cecilia, you know what I like. How about a little steak and eggs today? You know you love to see it. So red meat, not a health risk, at least according to the scientists of the University of Washington. And they've been, you know, looking at all of these major studies, and they found that when they came up with it, when they were doing all of this research, they actually formulated a new rating system to help communicate health risks of certain types of food in the process. So this is a really big, big deal. And the findings mostly dispel any concerns about eating red meat. Are you following me on this one? Any concerns with eating red meat? Again, if these scientists are to be believed, they summarized in this one that, this is their quote, we found weak evidence of association between unprocessed red meat consumption and colorectal cancer, breast cancer, type 2 diabetes, and ischemic heart disease. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And moreover, we found no evidence of an association between unprocessed red meat and ischemic stroke or hemorrhagic stroke, they summarized. So they say that they have been observing the shoddy nature of health science for decades. Each year, hundreds of what they say, frankly, lazy studies are published that simply attempt to find an observational link between some action, eating a food, for example, and a health outcome like death or disease. In the end, owing to these sloppy methods, varying subject populations, and inconsistent statistical measures, everything, especially different foods, seem to be both associated and not associated with cancer. So, you know, how are people in the public, how are we supposed to kind of interpret this mess, right? Well, the researchers came up with what they call a burden of proof risk function. This is a new statistical method that they came up with to evaluate and summarize evidence of risk across different risk outcome pairs. Okay, so you stick with me on this one. This is going to be some, these are some, you know, big words, but we'll try and break it down. So they introduced this new rating system. A one-star rating indicates there may be no true association between the behavior or condition and the health outcome. Two stars indicates the behavior or condition is at least associated with a 0 to 15% change in the likelihood of a health outcome. Three stars indicates 15 to 50% change. Four stars, 50 to 85%. And then five stars would indicate an 85% more or change, meaning very, very likely to be correlated. Now, when the scientists at the University of Washington used this function, they found that no, when it came to red meat, that none of the red meats that they tested very warranted greater than a two-star rating. They say that the evidence for a direct vascular or health risk from eating meat regularly is very low. To that point, there is probably no risk. This is Dr. Stephen Novella. He's a Yale neurologist and president of the New England Skeptical Society, which I'm a big fan of. Actually, I'm a member of skeptical societies myself. He says, there is, however, more evidence for health risk from eating too few vegetables. So the problem may not be that, you know, that you're eating red meat. It might be that you're not, you know, throwing some vegetables down with it, right? Get your medium rare steak, Cecilia. Get yourself a nice big baked potato on the side. And then add a little, you know, fresh broccoli or veggies and, you know, maybe a little cheese on top of the broccoli if you got a problem with the brocks. But I don't know about you, but I actually really like vegetables. I love red meat. I love vegetables. I'm basically like a human goat. And yes, that also means the greatest of all time, obviously. But, throw it down my throat and, you know, I'll eat it. Hence the reason why I probably got food poisoning today. Red meat, it won't give you cancer or heart attack, but it will give you a little bit of an upset tummy if it's not cooked properly. What do you think about that? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. We'd love to hear from you on this one. Quest Fanning messaged in, says that the Basement Tapes episode of Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History related to revisiting cholesterol research is worth a listen. Poignant too. Yeah. Remember when they were telling us that eating eggs was linked to like you know, high cholesterol and all that stuff. And then we found out, well, actually, there's good cholesterol and there's bad cholesterol. It's amazing how terrible health science has been over the years, and how we've just all, like, all these industries have grown up around it based on terrible research. And, you know, this is kind of like, again, this is the skeptic in me, why I'm not prone to conspiracy theories. Most conspiracy theories, I would say, is because what happens is that whenever something is, you know, claimed to be true, there will spring up an entire industry devoted to this untruth, to serving people based on a lie. And then what happens is that when it's found out to be a lie, you have an entire industry devoted to ensuring, you know, devoted to this capitalistic function, right? This is one of the downfalls. Yes, there are negatives to capitalism, right? It's not all sunny rainbows and things like that. There are downsides to it. And then you have this entire industry that's devoted to this lie and promoting this lie and making money off of this lie. It's kind of like, you know, what would be a good example? Perhaps like tobacco, right? Back in the day. Remember the ads like 4 out of 5 doctors say smoking Camels helps with a fresh breath, but like cleaner, healthier Camel smokes, right? Back in the day. And it's very much the same way with our health industry. I mean, like, how many like woo woo, like how many more like veggie mommies do we have to watch, or like the banana girl where it's like, you know, just eat only bananas and you'll be just fine, right? While they show their ass on Instagram, their butt on Instagram. Again, try not to get demonetized on this one, just to see if it's possible for me to do a YouTube video that doesn't get demonetized. Anyways, I know my YouTube parents are going to be watching these new videos today, because I got a message from them last night that said, you know, score your own video on how you think it is for advertisers, and then we will compare it. And if we can trust you to grade, rank your own videos, then we'll allow you to do it, which is kind of odd if you think about it. But anyways, I'm going to try, at least it's Thanksgiving anyway, so let's try and maybe do some family friendly content this week anyway. But, you know, so we'll see how that goes. But, so yeah, I'll try and watch my language a little bit more lately. I know Chris Morrill is not going to like that. I know he wants me to create AP After Dark, but I don't think I can do 3 shows a day. NeraUS333, our new friend over on Twitch this morning, being very chatty, glad to have you here, said, yes, enough facts. There's an agenda here. If you don't agree, you're racist or transphobic or some other nasty little label that allows the sycophants to cancel you. Yes, I know. I love medium rare filet mignon, they say. A little expensive, but yes, absolutely. I love filet mignon, but I gotta be honest. I think the ribeye is a better cut. The thing about the filet mignon that is delicious is the texture. But to me, the flavor of the ribeye is really, yeah. Robbie Theremin asking the real questions this morning. Is beer a vegetable? I think the answer to that is yes, because it is made from malted hops, which means a vegetable, right? So there you go. Quest Fanning says, try and remember the term for the statistics process for isolating variables. I don't know what that is at all. I'm not a scientist. I'm a talk show host. Cecilia says, I like it when they tell me coffee is bad and good all within a week. High blood pressure, but also helps memory. Overall, makes me a productive member of society. Amen, Cecilia. Amen. I'm with you on that one. I had some other stories as well. JP says, red meat is good for the soul. Hands down. Amen, JP. I'm thankful for you all. Beyond Meat's got some big problems. So I love the Wall Street Journal headline. Beyond Meat's very real problems. Slumping sausages, mounting losses. Reading another article over the New York Post. Beyond Meat factory riddled with mold and other dirty conditions, according to leaked documents. Go Meat. Team Meat. I'm not going to live in the pod. I'm not going to eat the bugs. I'm going to eat the meat. Give me that big, delicious meat. Tube steak. There goes my monetization. All right, we'll be back with more on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. I'm Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. We're so grateful to have you here. Thanks for tuning in. My tummy hurts. Got a little food poisoning last night. Now I'm just like... bathroom. I feel like a little bit of pain this morning. I know. I'll try and be fun for you though. I'm sorry. One more day of shows. So real quick, let me kind of give you the schedule for the rest of the week. I'm going to take a 4-day weekend, right? It's a holiday week because this is like one of the big holidays. So I'm going to do one of them big old holiday deals. And so here's what's going to happen. I will do a live show tomorrow. Yes. Tomorrow morning, Wake Up America show. No problemo. You get your show, okay? You can sit in your home in your PJs, sipping your hot chocolate in the morning or your coffee or tea or whatever, and watch me while I slave away in the cold but with a hurt tummy. And then Thursday, I will do a best of show. Friday may not be a show, okay? I haven't decided yet. Because I have to work really hard to like pre-produce all those best of shows. So I might just do a show. But here's the thing. Of course, there's the afternoon show. There's the Austin Peterson show. And I will also do one of those today and tomorrow. Thursday and Friday, those will be best ofs. So it's called Get a Life. I'm taking a break. I need a holiday with my family. Okay? How about that one? Yeah, going number 3, says Quest Fanny. Yeah, for sure. Matt Unruly says, first day of monetization and I had to look up your channel because you weren't listed in my subscriptions. How do you like that? Elizabeth Fanning says, red meat is why nature blessed us with meat teeth and fire. You know what? I think that's a good name for your canines. I'm going to start calling that. We need to rebrand our canines and just call them meat teeth. Talking about always trusting science, one of my friends from the 573 just messaged me. I think this is Albert Krockenfels. Good morning, Albert. Showing pictures of when we were always told to trust the science. And it has all these pictures of always trust science. You know what? I think I can pull this up for you. Let me take you over to my Twitter scene. Since I'm a little slow today, I might as well just, you know, slowly transition you over here. Yes, that's a video that you're going to see later when I have Camellia on. Oh no, why did I do that? Oh, you can see all your messages. Okay, there we go. Whatever. Here you go. Check it out. All right, so always trust the science. Thank you for this, Albert. I've got the picture pulled up. If you're not watching the show and you're just listening to it, you're missing out. I pulled up your picture. Nicotime cigarettes. Nicotime. The smooth taste expectant mothers crave. No flies on me, thanks to DDT. Heroin, hydrochloride, and... let this magic mineral asbestos. What were they thinking of doing with the asbestos? I have no freaking clue. That's kind of strange. But what was the purported health benefit of asbestos? No idea. Send us a text at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Have you been enjoying the new commercials and the new music and everything that I've been putting in? The new music is there to try and help, freshen things up. That's what the new commercials are for. But the new music is stuff that I bought and downloaded and licensed so that hopefully I don't get demonetized. You can send us a text, 573-319-1586. Go enjoy time with your family, says Cecilia. I absolutely will, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, I did have a story. Oh, yeah, we were talking about the lab-grown meat. So speaking of, you know, being skeptical, right, being skeptical of conspiracy theories, there are some conspiracies that I believe in. I call them conspiracies, not conspiracy theories, because I consider them conspiracy facts. but this one over at NBC News, anything that I read at NBC News is going to make me skeptical. Don't be so quick to dismiss lab-grown meat. The FDA's approval of cell cultured meat is the perfect opportunity to look at how it's far better than the meat we already eat. All right, so here's the thing. In light of, you know, skepticism and being skeptical, am I skeptical of this meat? Sure. But am I also being skeptical of being skeptical about the meat that's going to be lab cultured? Of course. Maybe it's going to be good for us, totally delicious, and we won't have to rely so much on agriculture in order to get our meat fixed, right? Because, quite frankly, if at a cellular level, it's the exact same thing as, you know, a steak, tastes the exact same as steak, has the same health benefits of a steak. It's just one's grown in a lab, one's grown in a cow. Right? Then great. You know, c'est la vie. That would be awesome. I would love that because it would make meat cheaper. You know, and honestly, if we can make steak a lot cheaper, I think that would be great. You know, steak should be a human right, honestly. Delicious steak. And if not everybody can have it off the cow, the fact that we can have some lab-grown meat, as long as it's, you know, purportedly safe, which, again, we have reason to be skeptical of, then I'll try it, right? You know, NBC is pushing it, so that makes me skeptical about it, because I think that they're, reptilian overlords trying to kill us all and make us live in the pod and eat the bugs. But I'm also skeptical of that claim. Again, you can send us a text at 573-319-1586. Quest out here trying to get me in trouble this morning says, I think it's interesting to juxtapose academia's obsession with asserting that the Founding Fathers were atheists with George Washington's original 1789 Thanksgiving Proclamation. Quest said that. Yeah, I don't think that there's any doubt that George Washington was a Christian, or that John Adams were, and I think Thomas Jefferson was outwardly Christian, but mostly it's because he wouldn't, a lot of times when a politician says that they're religious, even George Washington, you ought to be skeptical of that, because for the most part, I think politicians lie about their religion because I think it's a way to dupe the masses, right? It's a great way. I see it happen all the time. People who are not religious in any way, shape, or form, or who I know, have expressed atheist sentiments in the past. So you see them converting to religion either because, they want to look cool and be a part of a tribe, or that they want people to vote for them and to get them to elective office. I think in part that Thomas Jefferson, for example, he wasn't outwardly atheist, but I think he was probably inwardly atheist, or what you might call, you might say agnostic, for example, but because of so many of his quotes. But he had to be very careful about that because, again, in the late 1700s, you did not say that kind of stuff out loud. Thomas Paine, one of the reasons I think that Thomas Paine, not just because of what he did during the French Revolution, but one of the reasons why I think Thomas Paine was, lived his life penniless at the end of his life and was, a pauper and was sort of cast out, kind of a castaway from society, is largely because of his book, The Age of Reason, which detailed the horrors of religion, and it's what it has inflicted on humanity. So, when you say the Founding Fathers, you could say that Thomas Paine is not an official Founding Father, but he is an unofficial Founding Father, but he was most decidedly atheist. So, anyways, George Washington was not. Okay, great. You like George Washington? Cool. I'm more of a Thomas Paine guy myself. Yes, Thomas Paine was ostracized because he was outwardly atheist. Again, send us a text, 573-319-1586. Coming up next on the show, my goody buddy Patrick Carroll will be joining us from the Foundation for Economic Education. Say that, slow down, Austin. Say that three times fast. And we're going to talk to him about answering the question, are libertarians house cats? All that and more on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, it's 7:34, and you're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. All right, well, are libertarians house cats? That's the subject of this piece that my friend Patrick Carroll wrote over at fee.org, and it got me thinking this morning. I bet you our friend Chris Morrill, who watches the show every day, would appreciate a segment like this one. Well, it wasn't meant as a compliment, even though I know Chris loves cats. We'll talk to Patrick Carroll what it's all about. He's joining us live on camera right now from the Foundation for Economic Education. Patrick, good morning. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Austin.
Right. So thanks for coming on. I wrote an article a number of years ago asking the question, if cats are libertarians and dogs are statists or something like that. And it was, meant in good fun and jest. But apparently somebody on Twitter last night recently compared libertarians to house cats. What was he trying to describe us as, Patrick?
Yeah. So about a year ago, a pastor and progressive commentator named John Pavlovitz put out to his Twitter audience, in your own words, how would you describe libertarians? And this guy named John Spaulding, he responded, and his response basically blew up over the internet. And he said, they're house cats. They are convinced of their fierce independence while utterly dependent on a system they don't appreciate or understand. And I just found that obviously it's kind of witty. It kind of struck a chord with people because it's been shared everywhere. But as I got thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? There's something to that, but there's also something missing with his response. And so I wanted to push back on that characterization a bit with my article.
Okay, so then how would you say that libertarians are like that? And how would you say that his description would be accurate, like you say?
Yeah, so I think his description is accurate in that we are dependent, right? If we look at our lives, we have to admit we are very dependent on the government. The government provides myriad services for us, from emergency services to security to postage, that we are currently incapable of providing for ourselves. And so I think the dependence piece, there's something accurate there.
And why would you say that it's inaccurate, though?
Yeah, so where I think it's inaccurate is where he says on a system they don't appreciate or understand. And I think it's actually him who doesn't really understand the system, because the thing is, the parallel goes further. It's not just that we're dependent, but also, like house cats, we are dependent because we live in captivity, right? It's not that we are helpless beings, that we are naturally impotent. No, we're very capable of helping ourselves through the free market, providing to have our needs met. But what happens is we've had our hands tied. We've been captured. In a cat's case, it's much more of a physical captivity. For us, it's restrictions on the contracts we can make with one another, on the kinds of businesses we're allowed to set up. And so what's happened is not that we are naturally dependent, but that we have been rendered dependent by the government's rules and restrictions that make it impossible for us to be independent, to get our needs met without them, despite the fact that we're very capable of doing so. And so that's where I think the characterization falls short. And then when he says things like, and this is a very common idea, well, you don't appreciate the system. It's like the system crippled me, right? It's as if the government broke my leg, handed me crutches, and then said, well, aren't you so thankful I gave you crutches? Well, no, you're the reason I need crutches in the first place. And so I think the metaphor actually backfires in a sense. It's a caricature, but if you think about it, house cats are perfectly capable of living independently, and the same is true of people. People ought not to be pets, in my view.
It reminds me a little bit of that quote from the movie 300, when Xerxes, or whatever it is, says, "I am a generous god," right? They do have a bit of the attitude of the benevolent dictator. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Patrick Carroll. He's a writer for the Foundation for Economic Education. We were talking about the question of whether libertarians are like house cats. Chris Morrill says, yeah, well, house cats are much better suited for living in the wild than domesticated dogs are. Very funny. Quest Fanning this morning says that with the government having usurped so many societal roles, they've forced dependence. Very good point. You can also text the show at 573-319-1586. Patrick, I'd like to move on to another subject, a question that was raised that caused you to write an article over at fee.org about drone surveillance. You know, it didn't used to be a question before the invention of airplanes. When you used to buy private property, you owned the land, you owned what was beneath it. There were some mineral rights questions that came up in the in the 1800s, of course. But, and you would also own all of the air, the space above your house and your property or your real estate. But that changed with the invention of airplanes. All of a sudden, there was a buffer zone for what you could reasonably be expected to own in terms of airspace above your head on your property. Now that space has just started to get smaller and smaller with the invention and proliferation of drones. And the question is now, how much can we reasonably expect to have our private and personal space protected from what I would call unreasonable searches and seizures from drones? This is starting to become, pop up in many cases. Would you like to discuss it?
Yeah, for sure. So I wrote a piece for fee.org recently, and I broke down a case that's being taken on by the Institute for Justice about a couple called Todd and Heather Maxson, who live in Long Lake Township, Michigan. They have a rural 5-acre property, and Todd likes to fix up cars. He keeps a lot of vehicles on his property, but they've been in a years-long battle with the township over this because they are accusing him of illegally storing junk on his property. And so they're saying it's a zoning violation. And so they've been going back and forth. And anyways, the township hired this contractor to fly a drone over their property and take pictures. And the drone flew as low as 150 feet over their property multiple times over 2 years. And now the township is trying to use these pictures as evidence against the Maxons in court because you can't actually see the vehicles from public roads. You need the drone pictures to prove that it's even there. And so there's this whole court battle because the township didn't even try to get a warrant. And this is what Institute for Justice points out. Like, this is a blatant violation of what they would call Fourth Amendment rights. And I have some philosophical nuances that I add in my article about that. But yeah, it's basically the township is violating their property rights, certainly, with the zoning laws, and they're using the drone surveillance as a means of doing that. And so I think obviously it sets a very dangerous precedent, and it's drone technology is something that is really improving government's capabilities to stick their nose where it doesn't belong. And that's something that I think we should, of course, all be concerned about.
So in terms of nuances, and this is just, you know, for my own, you know, kicks and giggles here, but the question is, you know, what you should always have to get a warrant. But I mean, if you get a warrant, then at that point, it probably doesn't matter whether it's a drone or whether it's a satellite, because on some semblance, you know, we're all being surveilled by private companies. You know, Google is taking photographs of us and all of our private property. You know, you can tell Google, hey, you know, I'd like to be removed from this. And, you know, and the reason I know this is because Nancy Pelosi's house is blurred out in San Francisco, which caused me to question, well, hey, can anybody do this? Well, apparently anybody can. But I mean, in terms of like a reasonable expectation of privacy, I mean, if I own a drone and I want to fly it around my neighborhood, what kind of expectation should be placed on a private citizen, would you say, in terms of like, you know, respecting property rights and, you know, taking photos?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I think there's two extremes that we want to avoid here. Obviously, the one extreme is we don't want drones flying everywhere and absolutely no privacy, right? People like privacy. I think privacy is very important. And so that doesn't work. But I think we have to be careful of not going to the other extreme where we say people have a right to privacy, because once we start saying that, then, well, what about journalism, like investigative journalism? What about a private investigator, a detective? What about gossip? It leads to some really interesting problems. And so Walter Block, the economist and political philosopher, he talks about this in a chapter called Peeping Tom in his book Defending the Undefendable 2. And the point that he makes is we don't have a right to privacy from a philosophical basis, but we do have a right to property rights, and we can always engage in contracts in the market to basically have some guarantees of our privacy, right? So I might live in a gated community with a homeowners association or whatever, and the contract for living in that community might be I'm not allowed to fly drones, or I'm not allowed to invade privacy in a certain way. So I think what we really need is a decentralized market-based approach to privacy. And so absolutely, we want rules that are regulating who can use drones, where drones can be used. I think that makes perfect sense. But I think it makes a lot more sense to have those rules be kind of a bottom-up approach, a market-based approach, rather than having the government come in and say, here's your privacy rights, here's not your privacy rights. That's a one-size-fits-all system. Libertarians know that that doesn't work. And I think that philosophically, it also doesn't work with our views on private property rights.
Patrick, do you think, and this is going to like, we're venturing into big brain territory here, and it's a little early, but hopefully, you know, this isn't something that throws off too many of our listeners here. Stick around with me. But do you think that questions like these, when it comes to private property rights, in terms of, you know, what can reasonably be expected to be a private property right? Do you think that, you know, when it comes to like drones or airplanes flying over your property, for example, do you think that that poses a problem to deontological, philosophical approaches, right? The sort of black or white approach of like moral rules that are absolutely fixed? Because to me, it seems, you know, in a situation like that, you really have to have a more utilitarian viewpoint and be more flexible in your views. Because while, you know, if you or I were libertarians living in the 1700s or 1800s before the invention of the airplane, we, you know, if we were deontological, we would have said, well, there's absolutely no right for anyone to fly across my property, right? But the invention of airplanes required us to have flexibility in our, you know, view of property rights. And now with the proliferation of drones, we have to say, well, yeah, people have a right to fly drones around the neighborhood within some reasonable expectations, right? You know, so would you say that that poses a bit of a challenge to fix moral rules?
I don't think so. I think we just need to be really careful about private property rights. So in the past, they had the ad coelum doctrine, which basically was the idea that you own property all the way up to the sky and all the way down to the middle of the earth. But more recent libertarian kind of analysis, in my view, has basically said that doesn't really work well with our view, because it's really about what have you homesteaded? What have you kind of appropriated? And you can't appropriate 1,000 feet into the air. And so I don't think that planes flying over someone's property was ever really a violation of private property rights, because they had never homesteaded that space to begin with. So certainly, like, I'm sympathetic to practical considerations, and it's easy to kind of get very siloed into, like, you know, black and white, like strict moral rules, and then kind of ignore practicalities. But I think in a lot of cases where people have brought up practical considerations, it's often been, as with the ad coelum doctrine, not so much a problem with the theory, but just a problem with how we're interpreting and applying the theory. So I am pretty strictly deontological, but I don't think that deontology creates as many problems as many people say it will.
See, my thing is that for it's really about the tools in your toolkit. I kind of see, you know, deontologicalism in much the same way that I see something like Occam's razor, for example, more of a philosophical rule to be used, like a means rather than an end, if you will. But these are things that are we've got to be really careful talking about so early before people have had their coffee. But I do appreciate the conversation. And Patrick, welcome to the show. We are glad to have you here for your very first time on the program. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. What did you think of Patrick? Send us a text at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Did you like him? Should I bring him back? If you did, like the stream. Give us a little subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. And hit that bell notification icon. We'll be back with more. What do you call your in-laws? I know, it sounds like a strange question, but I mean, it's legit. What do you call them? Apparently, different people call them different things. We'll be back with more on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving week. I'm Austin Peterson. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. I was telling my wife the other day just how excited I was to see my mother-in-law. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. You know, you hear all these horror stories of people and their relationships with their mother-in-law. You get married, you got in-laws. A lot of people apparently have tension with their in-laws. And I get it. I understand it. I've seen people who, you know, have legitimate beefs or gripes or their mother-in-laws or father-in-laws or whatever, overbearing or just a general pain in the butt. But I got really lucky. I've got a great mother-in-law, and I'm excited to see her, and I can't wait for her to come and visit. I'm excited to have my family at my house for Thanksgiving dinner. And we invited another family over to our Thanksgiving dinner this week. We're excited to have the Mosleys, who will be joining us as well. It's going to be fun. We're going to play Monopoly and eat turkey, and it'll be a great family time. Apparently, not everybody knows what to call their in-laws. What do you call your in-laws? My mother and I just call her Verna. Just Verna. Just call her by her name, which I think is a lovely name. But a lot of newlyweds apparently are pretty perplexed. Some people say that they generally try to avoid using any names at all for their in-laws. You know, this year, we're thinking we're probably going to hit a record for number of weddings. But of course, that has to do with the old negative C word. But because so many people are getting married and so many new people are coming in and saying, oh, yeah, well, what do we call our in-laws? Do you call them mom and dad, right? Bill and Judy, hey there, right? So a lot of advice columns have been kind of tackling this whole etiquette puzzle for years, and it's kind of popping up in households, not to a surprising degree. YouGov, which is a pollster, Y-O-U, YouGov, conducted their first ever survey on the topic in recent months because there was a British person who wondered if the in-law discord that he saw featured in American television and movies was real. It was. According to YouGov's poll, 29% of couples call their in-laws by their first names. 17% of them refer to them as mom and dad, and 9% use Mr., Mrs., or Miss. The rest either don't have relationships with their in-laws or they aren't sure what to call them. Newlywed Lauren Coble was interviewed for this article in the Wall Street Journal. She says that she struggles with what to call her in-laws. She originally called her husband's parents Mr. and Mrs., which felt comfortable because she had a Southern upbringing. But the trouble came once that they suggested that she use their first names. She says, I'm mortified anytime their first names leave my mouth. So now I just avoid it. I think that's kind of funny. It did honestly feel kind of weird to me as well, because Stephanie and I got married a year ago, I was kind of like, you know, well, what do I call her, right? Should it be, you know, Mrs. Cole, right? But she's not married. So is it, you know, Miss Cole, right? But that's her old name. Do you call her mom, right? So I kind of waffle back and forth between both. And probably this week when she comes to visit, I will call her both. But Verna is just like what I default to. But there definitely is kind of like a weirdness there. You know what's funny is I don't call anybody Mr. And, you know, maybe this just smacks of like, maybe this is just a sign of like my arrogance and my ego. I literally call no one Mr. I have not called someone a mister since I think I was in high school. And maybe that's just, I don't know if that's how I was raised or upbringing, or like, I just think too highly of myself, but I literally call no one Mr. or Mrs. or Miss. I do not refer to people by those honorifics. What about you? Do you call people, well, Mr. Peterson, hello, Mr. Peterson, hello, Mrs. blah, blah, blah. I did that when I was a child, and I did, you know, to be respectful. But why would you, when you're an adult, call someone Mr. Brown, right? Call me. I've never had anyone ask me to call them Mr. Brown or like whatever their name is. But I've never called anybody I've never called anybody Mr. or Mrs. or Miss. It's at least since I was a child. Steffi says, I call your dad Papa Peterson. I called him that when I volunteered for the campaign. Yes, that's so sweet. That is very sweet. Good morning, Allie O'Neill. Thank you for joining us on the show today. The big guy says, 23 years. I just don't. Bert says, I try not to call them anything. And Steffi says, yes, Verna works. My mom likes that. Yes, Verna. That's what I call her. And that's what she likes to be called. So what do you call your in-laws? I just thought this was fascinating that people are having this kind of a problem that they don't know what to call each other. But Mr. and Mrs. That's for kids, I think. Or if you've got a teacher, right? But when you're a kid, you have teachers. I don't know. It just seems as if it's a little bit too much. Just, what do you want me to call you? How about that? I guess the only problem with that is like, how do you tell someone, call me mom or call me dad? Like, that also feels like a problem. Okay, all right, now I see why this is a bit of an issue with people. It's Thanksgiving week. I'm trying to keep it light, keep the stories down, but we're going to have to elevate it a little bit. Camellia's segment is coming up. She might be the reason I get demonetized from YouTube today. So in order to help avoid the whole demonetization thing, make sure that you check out the online shop, apforlibertyshop.com, over there. Get yourself a sweater. Get yourself a cool little Buddha. Whatever you need, the AP for Liberty shop. And we'll be back with more of the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 8:04. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, what is it with the left's obsession with kids? Why is it every single day when I open the internet and pull up Twitter, I say to myself, well, there's a perfect scene from our Twitter weirdness. Take a listen to this clip from someone courtesy of the Washington Free Beacon yesterday talking about having kids at, well, you know what? Let's just go ahead and play the clip. Please don't demonetize me, YouTube. Take a listen.
How significant are those two dates?
Yeah, and also hours before what they called an all-ages drag brunch, which is probably the number one target of these anti-LGBTQ events recently. Like, for example, the Proud Boys will go and protest any drag brunch, any drag story hour, anything that a child might go to meet a drag queen, not, you know, just to show them that they're human beings and people. They talk, they go there and they read Dr. Seuss there. They read regular books, but it's read by a drag queen, and they have breakfast. It is not some hypersexual event, but that's what it's viewed as on the far right. And these spaces have become dangerous places of real life information warfare. There's Proud Boys showing up on one side. Sometimes people like local Antifa members show up on the other side as a way to, it becomes a place where kids aren't safe, not because of the event itself, but because of this culture war that's been propped up on top of it. And that's not something that should happen. This is not something, you know, these people should be able to live their lives without fear of being murdered, literally. But right now, that's the sort of climate that's been created by anti-LGBTQ protesters and, frankly, bigots.
Boy, this is a really tough one. We're going to have the big guns here. That's Camellia Peterson joining us now live on camera. Good morning, CJ. Thanks so much for joining us. We're glad to have you here.
Good morning.
Yes, thanks so much for coming on. Happy Thanksgiving week to you.
And to you and everyone else.
Yes, thanks for bringing me Yingling the other day.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry that I have to have you on for all these, extra difficult topics and things like that, because You know, how about this? Give me your take, your response to how he feels, to what he said.
Well, I could not hear it as it was playing.
Right.
I have watched it once before, but you know, the thing is that you had, when you posted this, you also posted that you have never been to a drag queen show that was not hypersexualized. Mm-hmm. And that's just the thing, is that's been the controversy about this all along, is what is the intent of something like this? What does it normalize? You know, are we just, what's the purpose of them just going and reading Dr. Seuss? You know, when I was thinking about this, actually, Felicity and I were talking about this last night, and about the idea of what you normalize in society. And is this just people dressing up and going and reading Dr. Seuss for kids, and it's innocent and it's no big deal? And I was just thinking, you know, if that's the case, if this is just about people dressing up, oh, can women go to, you know, drag queen story hour and dress up, you know, in you know, hyper, like, super
lingerie or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, and great big fake eyelashes and great big fake boobs and everything else. Is that okay? I mean, is it okay for women to do that? Or is it only okay for men to dress as women like this? Because if it's not, then this is not just about dressing up and going and reading to children.
Right. And it's such a difficult situation for people like yourself and myself, where, you know, you know, this like brings out our conservative instincts. But then when you saw what happened at that nightclub in Colorado, obviously a terrible, horrible crime, right? And, you know, it wasn't like, sure, you know, that, you know, he talks about these things being targeted, you know, these drag brunches and things like that. You know, I can absolutely see what he's talking about, that there might be a danger of that. But I mean, the problem is that, to an extent, you know, violence must be used to protect children, right? It's just that we ask the government to do it, and for the police to do it. The correct way to do this is that the police should not be in there protecting the drag queens so that they can read this stuff to the kids and sexualize these kids. It's that the police should be shutting these kinds of things down, in my opinion, right? And, you know, that probably won't make me popular, but the fact is that, you know, two things can be true at once. Gay people should be allowed to be free and get married and have relationships just like everybody else. And they should not be, you know, involved with sexualizing children.
Sure. And I think this is where you also get into this is where you get into the sticky area of parents' rights. And the thing is that there has to be a line somewhere as far as what is appropriate or not appropriate with children. Mm-hmm. There should be no discussion as to whether or not it's appropriate to introduce sexual material to children at, you know, I mean, we have to set an age for that, but we're talking about, you know, toddlers and, you know, middle schoolers. And this is, you know, I don't think that groups like the Proud Boys and stuff, I don't think that they should be showing up to these things armed. There's really no purpose in that other to intimidate. And that doesn't do any good. It doesn't help anyone. So I don't agree with that either. I think there are other ways that we need to address that.
Oh, man, how do we address that then, Camelia? Because, I mean, in essence, we really are talking about like actually making laws. You know, laws, we need to go to our state legislatures and ask our state lawmakers to intervene, to find the best possible solution. And, you know, number one, we ought to talk about protecting kids from being transitioned. That should be the number one thing, because what I believe that is child abuse. And then two, you know, maybe deal with the question of, you know, sports, right? And intergender sports. And that's one question. But then three, when we talk, you know, a third on the priority list, should be preventing kids from being sexualized like this. And, you know, I'm going to sidestep this into this Balenciaga campaign. Did you see this story that I shared with you yesterday? This is about,
yes,
you know, they showed this little girl who was holding a teddy bear that was wearing adult, like the kind of thing that you would find if you walked into an adult shop, this teddy bear was. And it's, you know, again, another situation where you have these kids being, you know, exposed. You know, I feel bad for the poor little girl. I was watching this video the other day of Brooke Shields talking about how when she was 10 years old or to, you know, 15 years old or whatever, in this Calvin Klein campaign, Barbara Walters, you know, women do it too, like was sexualizing her and asking her all these questions. What is it with these adults that they can't understand, like the difference between an adult and a child? Why, Why do people feel the need to do this? And, you know, this is the kind of thing, this Balenciaga campaign that I think, you know, gives credence. It does. It's the kind of thing that inspires that kind of thing that happened in Colorado. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. And if you look at the pictures on this photo shoot, it's just disturbing. The whole thing is disturbing. I mean, not only are the teddy bears in bondage gear and the little girl, sorry, but the little girl holding the teddy bear, her whole face looks like, what the heck are they doing to me? Yeah. I mean, she does not in any way look happy about this. And I think probably what's most disturbing about this is that kind of hidden in that whole display in the background is a court document about pornography, about child pornography. I mean, what the heck is going on with that? That's just bizarre. That's sick.
Yeah, I agree. If you're just tuning into the morning show, Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson, then you're listening to Camelia Peterson, who is joining us right now. She's the editor of the Libertarian Republic and an activist at Americans for Prosperity here in the state of Missouri. You can text the show at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. Let's move on to something a little bit more family friendly.
Well, can I say something real quick? I wanted to point something out. Mm-hmm. Is it something that comes in with this that I think that we talk about a little bit? Is that there does seem to be this left-right divide on who is actually caring for the welfare of children, because the stuff that comes up with sexualizing children and making this normal is coming from the left. And in fact, when we talk about Elon taking over Twitter, that is one of the first things that has happened, is that people were going after Twitter for years for allowing child pornography on their site. Elon came on, and that is one of the first things that they addressed. And the hashtags that were involved with child sex trafficking plummeted. They were removed. And so, like, and he said that is his number one priority. And he's getting dragged for not letting Alex Jones on there, you know. But anyway, so I'm just saying there is a difference in who is actually, you know, caring about the kids.
Yeah, well, we're definitely getting demonetized with the words of, you know, in the future, we'll call it CP. Sorry. It's okay. It's also for Camelia Peterson. You can text the show at 573-319-1586. Hey, Camelia, let's talk about something a little bit more family friendly, shall we? Nice mug, by the way.
Oh, thank you. You like that?
Yeah. Let's take a look at that. What is that? Where did we get that?
You can find this Thomas Jefferson coffee mug at the AP for Liberty shop.
Yes. Use code
RARE
in the checkout for a discount. Thanks for that, because CJ, appreciate that. What is this? You sent me this, this lady who's like having problems. Her cookies were not accepted for Thanksgiving dinner or whatever. So they've decided to withdraw their invitation to appear with their family. What is this?
Oh my gosh. I saw this story the other day and somebody was like, it's like, am I the a-hole for calling my wife unreasonable for backing out of spending Christmas with my family after my mother rejected her cookie sample? And apparently the deal is that this mother-in-law actually, for every Thanksgiving dinner, is very concerned. They have guests over and is very concerned about the food that they're going to serve. And so she has people, any of the family members or who are going to participate in contributing food to the meal, have to send her a sample of what they're going to bring so that she can taste it and either accept it or reject it. And so this son's wife, I guess for 2 years, had submitted her dessert sample and had been rejected every time. And so this year it was a cookie theme, as she worked really hard and submitted her sample cookie and was rejected. And so she was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going. And so he's torn between supporting, you know, his mother and supporting his wife. And he thinks his wife is being unreasonable, even though, you know, she's crying and he's telling her baking is amazing. But still, you know, mom takes precedence. And what's funny is that at the end, he gives an update and he's like, so great. He was like, I just got off the phone with my brother. And his brother told him that his wife is doing the same thing and they are backing out of the, this was Christmas, I guess, they're backing out of the Christmas dinner. And so now this is all family brouhaha. I cannot even imagine. I've never had, I just,
That's funny.
I think
stuff.
Those mother-in-laws are more rare.
Yeah, I think so too. And just like yourself, Camellia, that's Camellia Peterson. You can follow her on Twitter at Rare Camellia. Camellia, is there anything else that you'd like people to know before we let you go? Because this is your only appearance this week.
Yes, and I would like to say I'm very thankful, and I'm very thankful for my family. And just wanted to real quick, Felicity is with me this time, so I wanted to let her say hi to everyone.
Hi, Felicity.
Here, come in closer. I don't know if you'll have to get in closer. There we go.
Happy Thanksgiving, Felicity.
Oh, she didn't speak. Oh, well.
Okay, she didn't say anything. Okay. No. I was going to ask her to sing a song for us.
Oh, well, I don't think that would have happened, but okay. No, I'm very, very thankful for all of you and for this community.
Yeah, very, absolutely. It's a great community. The Cantina Crew, Camellia Peterson, editor of Libertarian Republic and activist for AFP. Thanks so much for your time today.
Have a great week.
Have a great week. Did you like Camellia? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. Yeah, you might see Camellia again in the later in the week, but it's going to be replays. So maybe I'll cut this and play it in another episode for the best of on Thursday and Friday. What do we got coming up on the show? Oh, coming up next, we got our good buddy, Squiggly Line Guy. What are we going to talk to Squiggly Line Guy about? Well, why isn't Alex Jones going to be allowed back on Twitter? We'll talk about that and more when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. It's 8:23. You're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, I've noticed something strange in the last couple of weeks. Ever since Elon Musk took over Twitter, my follower count has been going through the roof. And I wondered if maybe it was just that they didn't suppress me anymore and I was allowed to be seen on the platform. Maybe I had been shadow banned or something. But then I thought about it. You know what it probably is? It's probably that so many people who like to follow me are the type of people who get banned from Twitter. Joining me is a man who's been banned, and he's back, Squiggly Line Guy, joining us now. Good morning, Squiggly. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, good morning, Austin. Good people in Missouri.
Glad to have you here, Squiggly Guy. So before we talk about the elephant in the room, let's just talk a little bit about how kind of Elon Musk has been handling the whole unbanning process. So everybody knows that Donald Trump got unbanned. We don't know if he'll actually use it because he's got his own platform, et cetera, et cetera. But we are starting to see a lot of people who had kind of been deplatformed starting to come back. You want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So not only did Donald Trump come back, although he hasn't tweeted yet, and I'm not sure he's going to be tweeting at all between now and December at the very least, just because the whole DWAC merger is going on for his True Social going public. So it's kind of like he kind of has to keep his mouth shut between now and then on social media. And then after that, you know, other rules can apply. But, you know, aside from that, you know, Jordan Peterson is back. The Babylon Bee is back. iReporter Savannah Hernandez is back. James Lindsay, Saragana Bacod, Juanita Broderick. They've all come back, you know, a few a day. So it seems like, you know, people have just, you know, kind of slowly been getting released out.
Oh, my God. And, you know, what has the reaction to the left been like, Squiggs?
It's just the most beautiful that you've ever heard. You know, everybody's saying that they're going to Mastodon, which Mastodon is basically like a message board that's, you know, for people that are offended by everything that need to be managed by Reddit mods. I mean, it's just a joke over there.
If you're just tuning in, you're watching the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson. I'm speaking to my friend, Squiggly Line Guy. He became known as a Squiggly Line Guy because when he wrote his name in Japanese on Facebook, it looked like a bunch of squiggly lines. And now we just call him Squiggs. And that's how the name stuck. Squiggs, now,
right?
Now Squiggs, the elephant in the room, the big man, the one that everybody has banned, Alex Jones. It looks like Elon Musk isn't going to let him back. Why not?
So that's kind of an interesting one where I think it may still be too early to tell. But, Elon Musk, you know, has said that he just doesn't have, you know, any mercy for, you know, someone that uses, you know, kids or, you know, the deaths of children for, you know, fortune or fame or politics or anything like that. You know, but at the same time, people like, you know, David Chipman, who burned children alive at Waco, are allowed on Twitter. So there's definitely a hole in the plot there. But at the same time, Alex Jones is kind of like the what was the catalyst for it all, where Alex Jones was essentially the very first person to get banned on social media. And, you know, they said, well, you know, it's easy. All you have to do is, you know, not be a scumbag like Alex Jones. All you have to do is not call the parents of grieving children crisis actors like Alex Jones, and you'll be just fine. But that's not the case. Not everybody was just fine. In fact, I'm on my fifth Twitter account now. It went down there very, very quick.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Squiggly Line Guy about Alex Jones not being allowed back on Twitter. Now, you're on your fifth account. You've been banned quite a bit. Me, mostly, I've been, I won't say banned, but just like suspended for inordinate amounts of time because of my support for firearms ownership. But you, and you know, be careful what words you use, instead, you know, use like CP instead of like child, you know what. Can you kind of explain to us, without using too much inflammatory language that might get me demonetized, because I'm trying to keep this YouTube monetization going, but why were you specifically removed from Twitter and from other social platforms, Squiggs?
Well, two times on Twitter, I was removed for the conspiracy theory that COVID came from the Wuhan lab.
Oh,
right?
How dare you?
Two times on Twitter. And, you know, when it's very, very, you know, that was always the most reasonable theory, right? That was like the furthest thing from a conspiracy theory possible. That was always like the most reasonable idea. You know, but they always said that's been thoroughly debunked. Even though that had never been debunked, and what they used, you know, to debunk that was essentially, their source for that was an American scientist that worked at the Wuhan lab that, you know, was in kind of like their word on it, essentially made funding possible there. And it was them just like raising their hand saying, I attest that everything is good there, even though, you know, we had cables from the Washington Post several years prior saying everything was not good there. We had someone with a conflict of interest saying, trust me, that's what made it into the fact checker on people's posts. And I got deplatformed from Twitter two times. And then, of course, on Facebook, I got deplatformed because someone reported my squiggly name as not being my real name, and Facebook took down my account and said, we need to see some ID. So I sent them my ID, and it took them 2 years to review it.
It took them 2 years to review it, your ID. But I mean, does your ID obviously is not written in Japanese, right?
Right. Yeah. So essentially what they did was they changed my name back to, you know, my English name, my real name. But then when I got my account back, I just said, screw you. And I changed it back to Japanese again. So,
so Squiggly, what do you think?
I'm still there.
Well, what's your opinion, Squiggly? I mean, you're like me, you're a liberty lover. What do you think? What's your opinion of Elon Musk deciding not to bring back Alex Jones?
I don't know that he's really made that decision yet, you know, as he's, you know, still just kind of, you know, rolling out unbanning people. And I think he's just kind of, you know, gauging the people that he's been unbanning and what the reactions to that is like. But before, you know, he gets to that big, you know, unforgivable sin, you know, because, you know, he would be, you know, risking, you know, like, actually being deplatformed from like the Apple App Store. And so when it comes to that, it's just kind of like, if you get deplatformed from the Apple App Store, you're done. You know, it's like, you could say, well, we've got free speech here, but nobody can download your app anymore. So what's the point? So I think it's just kind of like, you know, I mean, he could turn everybody back on at once, but it's been just kind of like a slow, you know, rolling move out where I think he's still gauging, you know, reaction to it.
Mm. Squiggs, is there anything else that you think that the good people who are watching the show this morning should know before I let you go?
Get on Twitter. It's fun. Yeah. Twitter is fun again.
It is fun.
Get
again.
Get on.
It's very fun. That's and it's fun to talk to you, Squiggs. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, by the way.
You as well. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much. Did you like Squiggly Line Guy? Send us a text, 573-319-4255. 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. We'd love to hear from you this morning. I'll be reading your text messages when I go to commercial break, and we'll be back with more of the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Here I am. What the hell's going on there, Austin? I have no clue. Everything was messing up there. Sorry about that one. Thanks so much for tuning into the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson. I'm sorry that that interview went so long. That means that we don't really have a lot of time to talk. I was going to talk to you a little bit about a couple of new movies that I'm interested in potentially seeing. James Cameron's Avatar 2. I haven't even watched part one, but part two apparently is going to cost him $2 billion to make. And we were going to talk a little bit about that. And apparently they use video effects to make Indiana Jones look 30 years younger. And if you didn't see the last Indiana Jones, count yourself lucky. It was so terrible. I wish I hadn't seen it. So now I just wonder if I should just not see the new Indiana Jones. Sadly, we don't have time to talk about that, unfortunately. But I just want to say thanks very much. Yeah, you think you're having a stroke, broke the show. Anyways, don't forget that I do have an afternoon show at 2 p.m. today. The Austin Peterson Show on the Real Talk Radio Network. You don't want to miss that, because on the Real Talk Radio Network, you get to hear me for another hour. So download the app on iPhone or Android. That's a great place to text me while the show is going on. And of course, don't forget to visit the AP for Liberty Shop website. Get your products in before Christmas, because tell you what, Thanksgiving's this weekend. That means that's it. It's time. You got to get your Christmas presents going so they can get there in time. Anyways, I'm feeling better. It seems like my stomach is starting to settle down. The food poisoning is starting to go away. Appreciate you very much. Hey, hey, my pants look like Austin's shirt. Okay, that must be nice. I'm not wearing pants. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, tonight, see you at 2 p.m. And then tomorrow morning for the Wake Up America Show, last one of the week before I do the best ofs on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com.